Welcome to episode 201 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Ryan Caveney from the Greater Western Sydney Giants about building a fan base in a new market.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who will be in Dallas for SEAT this July, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I am looking forward to being in Dallas for SEAT 2018. This will be my seventh time at SEAT. First time was in way back in 2011, Los Angeles, for the people who I met way back then, longtime friends. I'm looking forward to catching up with them in Dallas. I'll talk a little bit more about the next Sports Geek trip after this interview. As always, you can contact me, Sean Callanan, on most social media platforms and, of course, in the Slack community, the Sports Geek Nation Slack community. Or alternatively, you can contact me, Sean, at sportsgeekhq.com. You can get me that way. As always, love hearing from podcast listeners how I can help you, whether it's career advice. Talked to a few people recently about changing jobs and what they're looking at, or how we can help you with the campaigns, digital valuations and things like that with the digital $2 process. So you can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/work or simply reach out via email or Slack or Twitter. This week's guest is Ryan Caveney from Greater Western Sydney Giants. They play in the AFL. Are still considered a startup. I guess you are when you are playing against teams that have been playing for 100 years. So it's great to chat with Ryan, who is the Chief Fan and Commercial Officer, and we talk about his role and why he has that title in this chat when he stopped by at Sports Geek HQ recently. So here is my chat with Ryan Caveney from the GWS Giants. Very happy to be here at Sports Geek HQ with a visitor from the GWS Giants, Chief Fan and Commercial Officer Ryan Caveney. Now, there we go. Got the name right. Welcome
Nailed
to the podcast.
It. Thank you very much. It's good to be here. You know, I'm a regular listener and avid follower on social and Slack, which is now we're calling
Sports Geek Nation.
Sports Geek Nation.
Thank
Sorry,
you very
way
much.
To be on brand.
Yep, yes, good very start. Good. So first of all, before we get started, I want to get into your career and how you got to the Giants. Just explain for US listeners and people in Europe a little bit of backstory of the Giants themselves, being effectively a startup in the sports world.
Yeah. So the Giants are. It's the newest expansion club in the AFL. We've played this weekend as our 150th game, which means that we've had 50 games total at our home stadium in Sydney and about 25 at our stadium in Canberra. So yep. Year six in the competition, and we're positioned in a market which isn't traditionally from the game. So everyone in the US knows about how the NHL expanded into, Arizona, Florida, et cetera. And it's a very similar story to that, whereby the AFL looked at one of the biggest growing economies in Australia and said, we need to have a team there. And it's a great opportunity for the game. So at the club, while we are Giants, we wear a Giants hat and we also wear an AFL hat. And
yep.
we do that with a lot of pride, knowing that we're growing the game there.
Yeah, when I caught up with Cameron Swab, and we did talk about football, and he's got long history with Richmond and Melbourne. Australia can be divided on the Barassi line, which pretty much says everything south of the Barassi line is AFL land, and everything north is NRL and rugby league and rugby territory. And you're very much north of the Barassi line in Western Sydney.
We are, and I've been living in Sydney for a little over 13 years now. We'll talk about a little bit of that story, and I'm sure in a second. But I think what's unique is that there's this history that people can only support one team or one code.
Yeah.
And
the code wars is
the
they're
code
known,
wars
as they're known in Australia.
It sounds like an episode of Silicon Valley, but I really think that that's, you know, when we're up there in the jump, you know, at the Giants, we're not thinking about, we don't see ourselves competing with NRL clubs or A-League clubs or cricket. We really think that, you know, we're building new audience, new engagement, and we see some of those things as complementary. And, you know, I'd really like to see, I think maybe our generation will start to bring that multi-sport following, which happens with digital, good content, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, the code war is a thing unique, I think, to Australia. I think it is, you know, competing for the TV dollar and competing for the fan and the attention. But yeah, if you're in Boston, you know, you're a Celtics fan and you know you follow the Red Sox and you know and you keep an eye on the Bruins and yes, it might be varying levels, yeah. but you're a supporter of all of those different sports in some form or another.
Absolutely. And I still follow my four Boston teams. My wife's from Liverpool, so we're red yep. in the household there. And, yep. You know, I follow the Sea Eagles and the NRL. And you know, we can all live happily together and there's enough time for all that in my life.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, that it's changing now because, you know, as you see with Australians and the way they support, like because you get to pick and choose, you don't have the geographical restrictions of I have to follow all the Boston teams, you know. Because it's quite funny when people say to me, "You reckon after 200 odd episodes, I'd learn how to turn my phone off?" yeah, like people ask me.
Congratulations on 200 episodes, by the way.
Thank you. I didn't just do that for that drop. But yeah, I follow the Detroit Pistons. And the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Cubs and the Detroit Red Wings. And they're like, how do you come up with that combination? But it's like part of it's digital, part of it's when you grew up, it's part of it's who was successful. Mm. And I think that's part of the, you know, and now we're finding kids growing up that are following Liverpool or Arsenal or Barcelona as much as they are following the teams that they, you know, that they're geographically close to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So going a little bit back into your backstory, how did you come to where you are today? What was your background getting into the world of sports?
Yeah, so born and raised Boston guy. Grew up just a little town outside of Cambridge and Belmont, right outside of Boston, a few miles from Fenway Park.
Yep.
And started working in Boston at PwC as an auditor at the time. I won't go too long on this.
That's fine.
It could be
long,
but
you got to be able to crunch the numbers. It's still a big role of part of what you're doing today. So
it was, you know, it's kind of a different path than what I've heard on most of your shows that I've heard. But in the office in Boston, we worked with the NBA and Major League Baseball. I begged, borrowed, did anything I could to get on those jobs, and eventually they put me on them. And what we were doing there was looking at the salary cap and the revenue sharing models for the two different leagues and working with clubs. So I got to work with the Celtics and the Red Sox and the Raptors and the Expos and stuff like that. And I really got a taste for connecting my professional life with my passion.
So was that sport. Like in the, like, you know, what they would call capologists and understanding that space now?
Yeah. So you're employed, basically the players union and the league come to a deal to say, all right, what's, you know, CBA is, et cetera. Yep. They then use someone independent to go in and determine what are the league wide revenues that come in. And this was at the time when regional broadcasters were being acquired by teams. And so what's the fair value of a TV rights deal between the Yes Network and the Yankees.
Yep.
So stuff like that, which was really interesting, numbers based, obviously, but also technology based. Where is everything going? And you'll see a parallel in some of the stuff in terms of
career. Because, that's where they were moving into, you know, what was basketball and baseball-related income.
Yeah, exactly.
And that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I was really, you know, really lucky to get that gig in the Boston office. And, look, eventually I wanted to try some international work. Came over to Sydney on the back of working with a couple big U.S. tech clients.
Yep.
Fell in love with Sydney. Ended up working with most of the major media and tech companies in Australia and kind of in the region.
Yep.
You know, Foxtel, 7, 9, et cetera. And then did the classic switch where went from advisor to and ended up working at a client, which was Telstra.
Okay.
So
Telstra being the major telco here in Australia.
Yep. So massive telco. you know, huge market share. And from my perspective, they were one of the most interesting media companies to go work at, because they were going through that transition of what's the future of a telco.
Yep.
How do they think about media? How do they think about content? Went in there, and basically I was running the biz dev and strategy team within the media business,
yep,
which is about a $1 billion business there, and got handed the AFL and NRL rights deals, those contracts, yep, to become a part of that partnership team. And so for 5 years there, kind of worked with both codes at the head office level to help build the digital properties out and look at rights deals and,
yep,
also look after our sponsorship. So I got to play the role of the dumb American, yep, joining these two Aussie codes, which, you know, you talk a lot about, I can't remember exactly how you say it, but I always say I've made a good career out of being second.
Yep.
So taking ideas that I've seen and thinking about, okay, how can we apply that here and do that? Yep. And I think if there was one thing I was able to bring to the table in those discussions, that was part of it, definitely, yep, in the early years. Then after 5 years at Telstra, I was thinking about, you know, what do I want to do next? And spoke to a lot of the guys at the AFL.
Yep.
And this opportunity at the Giants came about. And once I got, you know, around the Giants and understood what the opportunity was and, you know, building this expansion club of AFL and kind of enemy territory.
Yep.
It was a fascinating.
And so that was what, they were a couple of years in, four years into their existence.
Yeah. So I came in towards the end of the fifth season there, just as the final series was wrapping up. And really it was a phase where, you know, to go to startup, like they were coming out of startup mode and going into scale up mode, if you, yep, will. And so that meant a lot of different things across the business side of the organization, and taking that next step in terms of where is our growth coming from? What are we doing? How are we going to continue to grow our brand? Which is an everyday challenge.
Yep.
You know, what the club did in the first 4 years was fantastic and amazing. And so I got to come in with this, you know, great foundation already in place. And really my job is to make sure that all those seeds that were planted are grown over the next 5 years.
Because one of the things with, you know, with footy clubs here in Australia is a lot of people will be talking about the culture of the club,
yeah,
and how it works. And a lot of that is driven by the coaches and the playing group and that kind of thing. But it's super important to also get it to the business side and the people running the team. How important has that been in the early years of the Giants to say, this is what we stand for, this is what we're trying to do?
It's been enormous. And, you know, people talk about the one club approach and all that sort of stuff. And I think it obviously was my first club I've worked at, so, yep, I didn't know anything different. But when I see people who move up from Melbourne, or when we get visitors from other AFL clubs or NRL clubs or whatever, and they come in and they see the way the building's laid out, the interaction with staff and players and footy, yep, and all that stuff. And then just the overall, you know, the mission that we have in terms of wearing those two hats, growing the code and also growing the club.
Yep.
You know, I think last year we had 100% of the staff said that they were proud to work at the Giants in kind of the annual staff feedback survey, which, yep, which is not, you just don't hear stuff like that.
Yep.
So there's something good going on. I couldn't tell you exactly, yep, what it was, but it was set up by.
But you would have heard, like, working at Telstra and dealing with clubs, you would have heard of this mythical Clubland place.
Yes.
So, Ryan, you don't understand. You're not part of Clubland. And it's very much, you know, it's an AFL thing. It happens in the NRL as well to say it's completely different in that space. Like, what was that, you know, that first foray into Clubland and to sort of feel like, understand how that works?
I think it's just this, you know, this passion for what you do and for the club that you're at. You just can't, it doesn't leave you. It's 7 days a week. It's 24/7. And to do what you do in those spaces, there's a love there for the job and a love for the club and wanting the club to grow and wanting to win. And, you know, the emotional roller coaster of certainly my first season and then now my second season, it's amazing the ups and downs that you can feel. You know, it feels like a year and a half in, just like when I used to watch, when I saw the Red Sox win their first, yep, World Series after, you know, I'm there and you get there really quick.
So, you know, being expansion, you know, the process was a raft of draft picks, lots of young kids, Lots of losing early on and trying to build. And like you said, you hit that sort of point where these kids have played for 4 years together, taken their beltings as a team, yeah, grown as a team. And now, as you said, you've come in and they're starting to peak up and starting to, you know, have some vital wins and starting to be showing that full potential of, you know, 4 years in the system, as they say. What were some of your first things that you wanted to look at when you first came in?
I think for the first 6 months, I wanted to just, and the setup was quite good. There was a really good transition. And so sitting back, learning, not making a lot of changes and just seeing how things were run and where I could, if I could contribute right away, I would. Yep. But as I said, a lot of things were in really good position. So the sponsorship set up in terms of a great set of blue chip sponsors. So a lot of the hard yards in terms of finding blue chips, getting them signed on was there. You know, we got to 20,000 members last year, which I think was the fastest AFL club to get to 20,000. We hope to get to 25,000 this year. So great things had been accomplished. Now my job was to go, right, how are we going to get to the next level?
Yep.
What are we going to do to get to 40,000 members? What are we going to do to, you know, take our commercial revenues to the next step up? And also the story had changed. So a lot of the sponsors that bought into the early startup club, yep, buy into the story. We're going to be great. We're going to be big, which they did.
Yep.
They also want to get their payback and,
yep,
make sure that their investment was right. And so my job is that as we have scaled up is to make sure that me and the team are delivering on that. And I think that we are. Certainly the footy team has been fantastic. But it's meant that the, you know, some of the ways and processes and all those things evolve as we go. And I think the sponsorship industry's changed really, really quickly,
yep,
in the last few years. And hopefully some of my other career with digital and other aspects has helped, you know, drive that change.
Cause you've got the whole, you know, that digital is pivoting really quickly,
yeah,
around what sponsors are looking for.
Yeah.
I think, like I was lucky enough to go to a game, last year and see, you know, what you guys are doing from a match day activation point of view, cause you've got a bit more flexibility in what you're trying to do with your stadium, you know, more sponsors are trying to do that. So, you know, you can reach out there. It does, you know, and it is, you've got to keep moving to make sure you're delivering for what your sponsors want.
Yeah. And it's been, you know, we talked a little bit earlier, like, and I do get a few laughs, especially here locally with my title with chief fan and commercial officer, right?
Yeah. I wanted to ask sort of why that is the title and why it's so important.
Look, it's really simple in my mind. The sponsors want engagement with the fans, and the fans want to be rewarded and thought about in the right way and get great experiences. And I think there's a legacy whereby maybe if the commercial business and the fan side of any business aren't working hand in hand, you're going to fail and you'll find out really fast in today's business because people can measure it. They want that engagement. And so, you know, the legacy of the chief fan side of theirs, just let people know we are a fan first club. And that our members and our fans are really important to us. And really, it's not just about the commercial side of the outcomes. It's about making sure that we're delivering a great experience on game day, we're providing great content, and that we're also just thinking about our members all throughout, you know, what partners we're signing, how we're working with them, all that sort of stuff.
And I think the member piece is, you know, is really important, especially in the Sydney market. You know, I think it has developed over the last 8 years. You know, the NRL are getting more mature in that space, you know, learning from the lessons. You know, I've often said that Melbourne as a city leads the way in membership marketing.
Definitely.
And, you know, so, you know, there's a few clubs, you know, the Swans are doing a great job in the city market. There's NRL clubs that are doing a great job like the Rabbitohs. And the market is now understanding this. Oh, I'm going to be a member of the Giants. And so having that focus, especially for a new club, you just sort of have to say, hey, buy in. But, you know, it's like following an early stock or an early startup and saying, oh, I was talking to you guys about Slack when it was little. Now it's big.
Yeah.
You sort of want the same thing for the Giants.
Totally. And you're absolutely like, what And I know everyone looks to Melbourne now,
yep.
which they should. It's amazing to think that the industry might hit 1 million members this year.
Yep.
And we're lucky that we've got our neighbors next door in the Swans, who are also just a blueprint for success.
Yep.
And so we try to take our learnings, but put our spin on it, right? So we say we're a club like no other.
Yep.
And that's one of our key values. And because we have to be, and we want to be, because we don't have that 100-year legacy. So our first, 20,000 fans, a lot of them had some affiliation with AFL and maybe in a previous life. And so our next 20,000 are going to be, new to the game in every way, shape, and form. A lot of them are coming through the great pathway we have with participation.
Yep.
And for everyone overseas, it's a bit unique in that the AFL controls the full, soup to nuts, grassroots participation all the way up through to elite. So for us, that's a very, very significant pathway and a really important part of our growth. And then it's finding all the other people in Western Sydney that maybe don't have that association. And, I think back to the conversation that I had whereby when the Coyotes started in Arizona, I think there was one ice rink in the state, right? It's like someone told me that. Mm. I think it was the first CEO actually told me. We don't have enough ovals in Western Sydney. We need to get more grounds out there. We need to do these things. And so this concept of fan conversion and how we message people who are not familiar with the game, don't know the rules. It does bring me back to thinking about when the NHL expanded, MLS, all the things they've done have been fantastic. And so we're trying to just constantly take learnings from all those different areas and go, we need a little bit of this, we need a little bit of that, and bring it in slowly.
Yeah, because it's a combination of stuff. It's, Birchie said when he was on the when we did a podcast late last year, at 174, if you want to go back, it's like, the AFL, they went, oh, we've reached everybody. We've, all the fans that are fans, we've reached. They know about us. They see us on and it's like, well, where are the new fans? And so part of it is geographical, being the growth corridor that Western Sydney is. But then part of it is also, where people come from, people that aren't native to Australia, that don't know the game, that are new. And then, kids that aren't being introduced in the traditional way, like I was, my great-granddad played for Collingwood, so my dad told me I barracked for Collingwood. I didn't get a choice. My son didn't get a choice, And how do you then get to those new fans? And that's where all of the, all the programs and everything you're doing now is, like you said, it's both seeding things for now, but 10, 15 years from now, what the club might become.
Yeah. And look, we really think that we can become a big club because of the growth and the population that is in Western Sydney. And so if I was to call out, the three funnels of fan acquisition that we look at, we talked about one, which is participation, and we work really closely with the league on that. And so all the people that are technically AFL employees, they wear Giants branded stuff out in the communities in Western Sydney.
Yep.
So they're pushing our brand, and that's a really successful funnel, but it's a funnel that is steady. You can't accelerate it. You can't supercharge it.
Yep.
You can try, but it's a pretty steady growth over the next 10, 15 years. The second one would be community.
Yep.
And what are we doing there? Are we being genuine? Are we really living the values of Western Sydney? We've got a fantastic community team that has been, that's been one of the major successes from day one of the club, I think, is that they've really done good work in genuine work and really identified what was important to that community and been out there both in Canberra and Western Sydney. And then the third one is everyone else. And that is a constant battle of trying different things, different techniques.
And so how do you, cause that's a big brief. How do you give to your, cause a lot of the time when we're talking, with digital teams and say, hey, what are the content you're going to do? The easiest thing to do is to hit up your digital cheer squad. The people are always in, and it's like, yes, you want to keep those and people engaged and keep growing them. But you're also saying, we want to make sure that there's this content that gets these people who've never heard of us. And whether it's quirky content that, drives the personalities of the players or silly trick shots or like what? It's like, how do you give that brief to say, well, we're serving multiple masters here?
Yeah. It's a great question. There's no silver bullet.
Yeah.
It's trying and learning. Certainly it's connecting the emotional side of us as a footy club, right? Yeah. Sydney's got, it's the most competitive sports market per capita with professional teams. Melbourne's, I think, two in the world. And so we've got to make sure that, you know, how are we differentiating ourselves? What do we stand for? So that that person that may not have a real knowledge of AFL, but also isn't necessarily, you know, an entertainment seeker, if you will.
Yeah.
We need to connect with them on some sort of emotional level. And whether that's a brand exercise, whether that is unique content that we get out there. Luckily, our fans, our 20,000, they're pretty rusted on.
Yeah.
They love the club already. And so, you know, we really feel like we can use them as promoters. We feel like we've got to continue to try and do different things.
Yep.
But we're also looking outwards and seeing what's working in other places. And, you know, it's a constant A/B test, if you will.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we're continuous growth is what we're looking for every year. Not trying to solve all the issues of the world in the next 12 months.
It's a mix of, you know, I think, you know, some of the stuff that Big Bash has done really well is the whole entertainment game day. And it's like, cool, let's bring in new people, right? And it's like, well, now how do we make sure that they're cricket fans? And so you've got the same same thing. It's like, we can, oh, I'm going to check out Giants, but it's like, oh, now you're at the game and you're starting to, and you're in that education phase, which, you know, not many other AFL clubs are doing. You know, they're still doing it in Brisbane and Gold Coast and things like that. But, you know, Collingwood aren't saying, well, this is what the rules are, but it's part of what you've got to do all the time to bring on new fans along the journey.
It's funny, like I, a lot, we'll talk about the spectrum of, you know, maybe a legacy AFL club versus a Big Bash club with Big Bash and how they run their, run it as an entertainment product and do an amazing job. Where does the Giant, where do the Giants fall on that spectrum? And we want to be, you know, somewhere
foot
in the middle.
Both camps.
Foot in both camps. We have to be.
Yeah.
And we want to be, and I think we're constantly just making sure that we're, when we think about initiatives or things we're investing in, it's to make sure that we're kind of living both foot in both camps, as you said.
And so how's the AFL women's team and the development of that and all of the nice surprises that it's, you know, that have come out of that.
And our Giants netball team.
And you know, I was getting there, but the whole, but those two teams, how has that helped, like almost made the club feel whole and make a different offering to the market?
It's been amazing. So, you know, our CEO had a really strong vision there that it was something that the club needed to do. And I think there were times when, you know, we're a growing club, as we all know, we're an expansion club. We got a lot on our plate to just focus on that. And so you could challenge and say, you know, if you're, again, if you're a startup, are you, why are you pivoting to something else? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Just focus on the core here.
Yeah.
But the reality was, is that, it was one of the best things that the club has ever done with, first getting the license for AFLW and then striking up this great partnership with Netball New South Wales over the Giants. And so it has brought us, you know, so much to the brand. Number one, so much to the staff that work at the club. That's where that proudness comes from. The atmosphere with three teams of professional athletes around the place every, you know, almost every day.
Yep.
Talking to each other, sharing, you know, coaches getting together. It all kind of centers around our cafe at lunch, right? It's fantastic. It's like the heart of the club. And then that just naturally flows out. Like, how fast the other two teams were able to take in the culture and then to see it flow out into the community and the way that people talk about us. And certainly the growth that's meant for us in terms of audience and consideration and what we stand for in the community has been huge. So, you know, we're lucky in that we're the only, you know, the Swans don't have a women's team at the moment. And so we really get to focus the New South Wales market on, our AFLW team, and then the start that the Giants netball team had with, you know, some of the biggest stars in the world being on that team and then making it all the way to the grand final in their first year. It's been fantastic.
So the other thing I want you mentioned before the issue of ovals. Early this year, the AFL rolled out a modified game, AFLX, as a cut down version of the game that can work on, you know, smaller fields, soccer fields and rugby fields. It really was a quick run experiment, you know, in multiple markets. How do you think that, you know, as a first run thing, how do you think that's going to help you in that space and potentially get people playing, just get people kicking footies?
Yeah, you know, really enjoyed it. You know, it was a fantastic spectacle. I don't think any of us knew exactly what to expect. And yep. Give the credit to the AFL again for actually going out and challenging, trying new things, and saying, you know, we've got to try to continue to grow this game to different audiences and look at ways with that challenge. And so there's rectangles everywhere, yep. as we know.
Yep. The world game is dominating the headlines right now. Yes. So yeah.
Yep. And, we, you know, there's literally schools that we can't play AFL at and they want to run programs. And so they need something that they can do. And so I think the future of X is going to be really strong. I think it's a great entertainment proposition as well, because it's quick.
Yep.
And it's certainly, you know, it brings a little bit more that it's on that Big Bash spectrum.
Yeah.
It's a little further that way. So I think it's got a future and I think the players really enjoyed it, which is important.
But I mean, when I was looking at it, and again, you know, I'm in the bubble of Melbourne,
yeah.
and hearing the feedback of it here, I watched it, and you know, I've watched footy for many, many years, and it's like, it's not for me. Like, it's footy in February, so I'm happy to watch it. And, you know, you want to watch to see how your draft picks go and that kind of thing. And it's, you know, preseason, but like I'm looking at it and go, oh, it's not for here. It is for places where you haven't got ovals traditionally. It is for new fans. And if that's how they start understanding, because, you know, when I have US friends come over and I take them to the game, you know, and I'm lucky enough to take them to MCG and they say, explain me the rules. I said, okay, the first thing is there is no rules. Right. Once you get that, and just enjoy, you know, the game, because it's so confusing to new people. Stripping it back, making a more simpler game, make it obviously higher scoring and those kind of things, is appealing. And you're right, it is further on the entertainment spectrum, but it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where it goes and where it becomes a product at elite level, but then also as a co-development and introducing new people, I think that's where it's going to have its success.
Yeah, we were talking about last year. We had Dan Magala was over,
yep.
and we had a meeting with him, and we were talking about this concept of you'll know when you go.
Yep.
And that's to get, you know, X, and that what you said is that, you know, I'm a perfect example. American comes over to Sydney, never seen AFL before. Yep. You go to a game. And you go, oh my gosh, look at, this is an amazing sport. I don't know what's going on, but there's some amazing athletes out there doing crazy things. And so it took, a couple years for me to get my head even remotely around it, but that's because I had good people shepherding me through. And so if X can just get people to see these amazing athletes in play, the product will eventually it'll hook you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all back the game at a certain extent, but my job is to figure out how do we help get people to that product, and to give a chance, give their 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon with so many other products to actually come and see that.
You're competing against everybody now. 20, 30 years ago, it was just Saturday afternoon, and now it's Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night footy, and all of these, you know, different products. Mm. It's, you know, if you try to put your hat on of I've never seen this game before, it's really overwhelming. And so, you know, that's the challenge that I guess you're faced with, you know, on a daily basis, because you're talking to these new fans all the time.
Yeah. And like we started putting rules on the scoreboard a couple of years ago at every whistle and doing all those things that we need to do that, you know, traditional, you know, I'm not going to name any clubs, but, you know, people would go,
we don't need
these fans know this and all this other stuff. And, you know, we're not.
But it's for a different, very different audience. I've had the same discussions, you know, working with, the world game, and they, you know, and I said, well, if you want to talk to an AFL fan, you need to explain offside because they don't understand it.
Yeah.
But then you hear the traditional fans going, well, we don't need to explain this. And it's like, well, it's not for you. And so I think the good thing about digital and in part is that you can start to segment that type of content. I think the platforms are getting better at that. So, you know, your avid fans are seeing the stuff they want to see, and you're like, oh, you're a new segment. This is for you guys, to give a bit of that balance.
Yeah, definitely.
So One thing I did want to do, and I think it's going to be the only time that I have a song in the podcast, is the Giants theme song. Because, like, that's one of the things when people come to AFL, they go, what is happening, right? Because the theme songs are a traditional historical thing in AFL where they sing the song at the start of the game and after a win they play the song, all the fans cheer, the players sing the song. The Giants theme song is the only – my son had his – I think it was his 19th birthday or 18th birthday it was, and all of his friends decided to start playing the footy songs as at the end of the night. They'd obviously had a few beers. The song that got the most raucous and feedback and yelling was the – because, you know, the Giants one. And because it is, it's one that, it's an absolute cracker.
Yeah.
And the fans just get around it.
Everybody gets around it. My 3-year-old son, Daddy, play the Giants song. Like, it's all, it fires you up. It's got that real patriotic kind of feel to it. And, you know, big, big sound.
But it does, for you as chief fan and getting the fans fired up and, hey, here's our story. It hits the mark.
Have you been sitting in my 2019 marketing planning sessions?
I literally dialed it up on YouTube just to refresh it for me. But I've got memories of my son's 18th, and I'm watching all these 18-year-olds that all from Melbourne, that all barrack for different teams, and they were singing all the songs. And when the Giants song came on, they all went bananas and started jumping up and down. And I'm like, no, that sort of one shows that the cut through that the Giants have had overall. But, you know, to have that is, it was just me observing.
No, you've hit on something because that song does have an impact and we've noticed that. And we actually think that there's more we can do with the song and the emotional side of that experience. It just gets people in that mode. And so, we want to figure out how can we help bring that out to the masses a little bit more so that you don't have to be. If that can be a gateway in for people, fantastic. Yep. That's great. And so we will look to think about that for sure as we go.
I mean, the Richmond one last year and, the iconic yellow, the whole 90,000 people yelling at yellow and black, it's so, being part of.
Thank you for bringing up our prelim loss in front of 90,000 Tigers fans and maybe a couple thousand Giants fans. I can remember it vividly, but yeah.
I did not. No, sorry, Ryan's now in a fetal position. We'll just pause and we'll come back in a moment. But I didn't mean to bring that up, but as my mum is mad Richmond, so, it is when the Tigers army is up and about, like that's one of the things.
It was a moment that was, for any sports fan, you knew something special was going on.
Yeah, and it is something that's, unique. I guess unique to AFL, and it is it is funny. He's explaining to an American the first time, and they go, "Why are 22 grown men huddling in a corner singing, huddling in their room singing a song?" Well, that's what they do. So, we'll put that'll be the sounds of the game. We'll put the Giants theme song at the end of
perfect
at the end of the podcast. And if you listen to this during your workout, I'm sure that you'll just power through that last part of your run or something like that. So, I want to finish with the. Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Al from the 49ers who was on recently?
Al Guido, yes.
Al Guido. So he spoke about, I grew up in Boston. He grew up in Philly.
Yep.
I used to get carried in by my uncles and aunts. This was in the days of the old Boston Garden. And I kind of grew up in the Larry Bird era.
Yep.
Where...
Is there pictures of you sitting behind Bill Simmons on YouTube or something?
I don't think our seats were as good as his were, but basically they used to just let, you get carried in even for as long as our parents could actually lift us.
Yeah.
They would carry us and hand one ticket. We'd sit on their laps in the seats and the Boston Garden would be probably 120% capacity, which is why it was so hot all the time. So,
you haven't thought about bringing that back for the Giants? If carry your kid in for free?
Kids in free always.
There you go. But so you don't have to carry them in. Just walk them in?
Just walk them in. We'll take care of you. But it was – I can't remember exactly what game, but it certainly would have been some of those fantastic 80s Celtics games.
In the late 80s before the Pistons started to get on top?
The bad boys. Yeah.
So, I wish I was able to see those.
I was lucky enough that's what I grew up being able to see was the Larry Bird era Celtics and having those, that's what made me into the diehard. Boston's a sports town, just like Melbourne is actually. They're very similar like that. And yeah, that's the memories.
Well, I wasn't lucky enough to go to Boston Garden before it was before they moved over to TD Garden, but yeah, one of historical sports venues for sure. So you would have been a fair few sports events in your time. Is there a favorite food memory that you have?
There is, and again, I got to go Boston, but this time to the Red Sox.
Yeah,
just behind Green Monster is a road called Yawkey Way.
Okay,
and you're technically outside the stadium, but it's full of vendors, and one in particular is a famous Boston thing, which is Italian sausage, peppers and onions, and some spicy brown mustard. But that's the American favorite. The Aussie favorite, you just can't go past a sausage roll and beef pie at halftime.
Meat pie and sauce.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
It is a delicacy. It's still my go-to. I can't go past a halftime or a three-quarter time pie after a few beers. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Instagram and Barstool Sports, probably.
Okay,
I'm definitely a stoolie, so I have to give that credit. But those two.
Still just checking in on the latest news and what's happened in the world. Is there someone that the podcast listeners should follow, and why?
I'll probably go with a couple non-sports ones, maybe, or one non-sports one. But there's a podcast and Twitter and everything else, but it's mainly a podcast. It's called Exponent, which is all about strategy and tech.
Yep. And Ben Thompson and James
Allworth.
I
just love the way that they think about problems and issues and what's going on in the world. And I think there's a lot of learnings from a lot of the stuff they talk about in terms of how we can bring that into sport and what we're doing.
Definitely. So, like the whole looking at startups and the tech media space, they're always talking about. So whether it's, Facebook going through Cambridge Analytica scandal or, hey, this is, looking forward to hearing what they say about, Instagram bringing out Instagram TV, like what's their take on it?
Yeah.
But also the bigger picture, larger scale, what's the problem of having, four companies control the internet, like that kind of stuff.
It's amazing. And it really helps get your brain going on something. Maybe, as I said, we're all so 24/7 in sport. Yep. This is a nice kind of mental challenge to think about as you're driving in or whatever.
And I really have enjoyed when Ben Thompson's been on Bill Simmons, and they've really just dived in on sports media, where it's all going, where all the rights are going with Disney, enveloping all of these properties. What's it going to mean? So, I'm a big fan of that as well. And I also like following Ben's Milwaukee Bucks account on Twitter when he takes off his hat of what he does at Exponent and Stratechery, which is his subscriber based site, which he writes about, and then he's just full on fan, trying to get Jason Kidd fired for Milwaukee Bucks and things like that. So it's always fun
being a fan, and that's why it's great to have different teams to support, because even when we're working and doing things, we can still be fanboying at other teams.
Completely. So the last one is what social media platform is your MVP? So you can put your Ryan hat on, and you can also think of it from a Giants point of view.
Yeah, from a Giants point of view, it's definitely Facebook. It just is the best place for our community to engage.
Yep.
So whether it's the Giants fan chat page or our own official pages there, whether we're transacting, et cetera, that's where we get the most engagement and where we learn the most.
Yep. It gives you that segmentation piece, so you can say, hey, you're just new fans, this is what we want you to see, that kind of stuff.
And the AFL's obviously done some amazing things with the platform as a whole, so there's a really strong partnership with Facebook there, and I think, that works really well. For me, again, it's Instagram.
Yep.
I just, catch up, whether it's seeing what my friends are up to or whatever, but really enjoy that one.
And I think as we're recording this, they just announced, they've just passed 1 billion users, which is, when Zuckerberg bought them for $1 billion and what was it, 5 years ago, and everyone's going, wow, it's like a pretty good buy so far.
Yep. That that's one, and when everyone says M&A always fails, that's one that certainly has not.
No, no. And, you know, for them to be launching out Instagram TV, so that, you know, vertical viewing of and longer vision, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how it works for sports, because it will be, you know, that vertical window will be probably the way that you introduce the Giants to a whole bunch of new fans.
Totally. And you know, we want to figure out ways to better engage with our fans on that platform. We're constantly trying new things. And, you know, I think as it has socially, I think it will follow as well with, in terms of it'll get stronger for us over the next couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Where can people, speaking of the internet, where can people connect with you if they wanted to connect with you on the internet?
All the platforms, I'm there. So Ryan Caveney on Instagram, I think Caveman33 from Larry Bird days, yes. On Twitter.
Yeah.
But certainly on LinkedIn. So, yep, and on Slack as well, on
Sports Geek Nation on the links. So
I've got to become a foundation member of for you and give a plug there.
Yeah. So everyone, yeah. So connect with Ryan if you've got a question, send him a tweet or hit him up on Slack. Thank you very much and all the best for the rest of the season.
Now, honestly, thank you very much for having me on and hopefully we'll see your pies in the finals.
Hopefully too. I'll be happy to match up against the Giants and look forward to it.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean.
Join sports executives from around the world at sportsgeeknation.com.
Thanks again to my guest, Ryan Caveney. You can send him a tweet, Caveman, that's with a K, K-A-V-E-M-A-N-33, showing his Boston heritage, or Ryan Caveney in the Sports Geek Nation Slack community. Thank you very much for Ryan for talking about Sports Geek Nation. Foundation membership is still open. As I said in the previous episodes and in launching it and did the soft launch on podcast and also spoke about it in the Slack community, SportsBiz Slack is now Sports Geek Nation Slack. And part of, I guess, expanding the offerings that Sports Geek Nation is going to be, we're also opening up the Sports Geek Nation Facebook group. If you are already a member, or if you would like to be a member, if you'd like to see what this is all about, simply go to sportsgeeknation.com/Facebook group. The main reason for using a Facebook group is one, got a little bit of insight from my friends at Facebook saying they're looking at how sports can use Facebook groups to engage fans and engage interest groups. And I think it is definitely part of the skew to the community side of things that they want to do. So we'll do that. I think it provides a good space for if you see something that you like or see a different tactic that's being used in Facebook, you can simply share it quite easily to the Sports Geek Nation Facebook group and ask people's opinion, which is what we've been doing. But I'm also going to be doing some Facebook Live videos in there, some Q&A. And so I recorded one last week. If you did not watch it, you can go to sportsgeeknation.com/Facebook group and that'll direct you to the group and you can join it, where I sort of took on some questions around what is Sports Geek Nation, what's it going to be, what are my plans, but then also I gave away some of my tips around how I go about networking online, how I've used platforms like Slack and build out the community, how you can best use Slack and leverage Slack, but then also some of the old school tips of what I do on Twitter and what I've done on LinkedIn. As I've said previously in keynotes and things, I'm a big fan of LinkedIn and I think it's a real powerful tool. So I'll take you through some of the things that I do on LinkedIn, how I use it, why I think it is powerful, and some of the opportunities, especially for people who want to grow their personal brand and also develop themselves potentially for their next job or widen their skill set. I think LinkedIn is very valuable for that. Other parts of Sports Geek Nation is there'll be a monthly email of things that you may have missed in the Slack and Facebook communities and jobs you may have missed and some profiles of people. And don't forget, if you sign up as a Foundation member, you get bonuses, including our Sports Geek guides, Facebook data and campaigns and all the ones that we're going to produce down the track. So if you have not signed up, go to sportsgeeknation.com/foundation. And I just wanted to shout out, I've been completely humbled by the response so far. I'm not going to name every single person that signed up yet. Jolly is going to be making a list and making sure that everyone who does sign up does get a shout out. But just a few that I wanted to say shout out to Tim Baker from Adelaide United, Thank you for signing up. Amy Wadwell, who's now at Sky City, New Zealand, was formerly at Netball in New Zealand. It's great to have podcast guests signing up, like Steve Connolly from the Boston Red Sox. Thank you very much, Steve. And also the variety. I really like the variety of pro sports, organising bodies, and minor leagues. So, you know, Burton Lee at the Peterborough Pete, based out of Canada, joining up. I really appreciate it. And then someone that I was actually speaking with last week, David Huxtable, at Basketball Victoria Country. I presented there recently. So thank you for signing up. And the good thing is, part of that monthly email will be access to the keynotes and things that I've done recently. And so one of those will be what I did with Basketball Victoria. Had an absolute ball talking to the Basketball Victoria associations around how they can leverage stadiums and how they can best connect with their association members and provide value and where digital fits. Yeah, those kind of presentations that I do on a regular basis will be shared with the Sports Geek Nation community. So if you haven't signed up yet, please do so. It's going to launch officially on July 15. So you need to get on board as a foundation member before then. Otherwise, you can wait and see what happens. But the foundation membership will close on July 15. As I said earlier, really looking forward to the next Sports Geek trip. We'll be in Dallas for SEAT July 21-24. And the real thing that I'm really excited about is to be running the Digital to Dollars as a workshop, not as a keynote. I sort of did a trial as a keynote, but this is going to be done as a workshop. And ideally, this is the workshop is a two-day workshop, and we're going to do the 50-minute version. So we'll be running through it really quickly, and I'll be doing it with the help of some former podcast guests in Jane Busman-Wise from the New York Red Bulls, Jesper Nyholm from Seven Peaks, and Zach Monette from Team Novo Nordisk. But we'll be going through the five pillars of the Digital Dollars Network: audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch. So I'm building out that workshop and working out how to best leverage and the IP and the knowledge of Jane and Jesper and Zach on what they know about the different parts, in, hey, what do they know about content? What are they looking at audience? How they do valuations? But then really giving direct instructions for people on tables, pull out pens and paper and start working through the process. Start diving in on what they're doing from an audience. Who is their key audience? What are the key content items that are working really well? Who are they working well for? Distribution-wise, what's the social media side of things? What platforms are working? Why are some platforms more popular than other platforms? What do sponsors want out of those platforms? Which gets into that valuation pitch. And then start doing a little bit of repitching. Discussion around the table of how you could repitch potentially things that are currently happening in your business, currently happening with your sponsors, how you could potentially reframe that using the model that we're talking about with Digital to Dollar. So I'm really looking forward to that Monday 2 p.m. session at SEAT Dallas, as well as catching up with all the people that I do catch up with when I'm in SEAT. So if you haven't downloaded the agenda, please do so. There'll be links in the show notes to download the agenda. And if you haven't, download the app. The app was terrific last year. It's a really good way to tag which sessions you're going to, and also make connections with people as you're moving your way around through the conference. So from SEAT Dallas, I'll be then going to Philadelphia for Podcast Movement. I've been to Podcast Movement the last 2 years. So July 24, 26, I'll be in Philadelphia, hopefully outside of Podcast Movement, catching up with a few people and maybe a podcast or two. And then the week after that, July 28 to August 5, I'll be in New York for a little bit of time off, a little bit of sightseeing, but also hoping to catch up with a few people, do a few interviews for the podcast, maybe do a little bit of work from a workshop point of view. I'm starting to work through the Digital Dollars process with different clients. But most likely I'll be following the lead of suspended Aussie cricket captain Steve Smith, who was recently in New York and was photographed by the Daily Telegraph. And I'll read the description. The one man who might be able to save the Australian cricket team was forlornly nursing a beer in a dingy New York bar. And I hope to do that in New York sometime. The Daily Telegraph did cop a fair bit of flack for effectively taking a photo of the former or the currently suspended Australian cricket captain drinking a beer in a bar. So I don't want to be like Steve Smith. So if you are in New York at that time, don't let me drink alone. Catch up with me. I don't need the press. So yeah, please reach out if you're in New York. I'm already teeing up some meetings for that time. And then August 6 and 7, I'll be heading down to Washington for some work and then some meetings in Los Angeles before flying back on the 7th. So please reach out if I'm going to be in your part of the world. I'd love to catch up, especially want to catch up with people who are part of Sports Geek Nation or podcast listeners, which you potentially could be both of. So that's it for this episode. Thanks again to my guest, Ryan Caveney from the GWS Giants. And for the sounds of the game, stay tuned after the closing credits with DJ Joel for the discussed GWS theme song. As I said with my conversation with Ryan, it is an absolute cracker. I don't normally put music at the end, but I do enjoy the GWS theme song. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Foundation pricing available for a short time at sportsgeeknation.com. Need help with your digital rate card? Not sure how to price your assets? Is there a disconnect between digital and commercial? That is where Sean works best in digital divorce counselor mode. Book a time for a call with Sean to discuss the Sports Geek process. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Well, there's a big, big sound from the west of the town. It's the sound of the mighty Giants. Feel the ground is shaking. The other teams are quaking in their boots before the Giants. We take the longest strides and the highest leap. Stronger than the rest. We're the greater Western Sydney Giants. We're the biggest and the best. And we will never surrender. We'll fight until the end. We're greater than the rest. Shaking, the other teams are quaking in their boots before.